بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد
محمد. السلام عليكم جميعا أخواني وأخواتي العزيزات ورحمة الله وبركاته. As you can say, today we have to be really grateful to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that at the end our brothers and sisters managed to win over all technical problems, and I want you to somehow encourage them that they have done a good job the second day and everything is well prepared. So I'm expecting you to recite loudly salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
Also, you are welcome, as we said yesterday, there will be inshallah some small papers distributed for you. So if there are any questions, if you have any questions, please feel free to write down your questions, and inshallah we'll try to answer your questions before starting each lecture for the today's program. So today's program is dedicated to discussing how tragedies occur in societies, but here we are going to focus more on a historical side. So this is what is going to be today. So we're starting our lecture. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wa na'udhu billah wa bihi nasta'in. Wa alayhi al-ittikal fa huwa khayru mu'in. We said that we are going to speak about Imam Hussein's revolution being an everlasting source for inspiration. As we said, today we are going to concentrate and focus more on the historical side of Imam Hussein's history. But again, I don't like it in a way that we focus on the history and somehow ignore the present time that we are living in. This is again another problem. We should learn the historical facts, learn them in order to see how we are going to approach the future. Just like when you are looking or you're driving, you do need to look on the mirror. Why you should look on the mirror? The mirror is going to show and reflect what's on the back side of your car. But you have to be careful what to do and how to drive in order to drive to the front. So you need to know the history, and the history is so important, and that's why we have been focusing today on the historical facts that could be useful for our discussion. So, I quote now the book, The Martyr of Freedom, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, volume 1. I quote, "There is a logical connection between historical events which help us arrive at important conclusions about key instances in our history. In order to appreciate this, we must use a method that, while remaining within the framework of a particular period, will enable us to deal with unclear, though not indiscernible, pieces of information. Such a method of study is a thorough and comprehensive approach, and the one who follows must remain clear and objective in his observation and the conclusions he draws from them. So you have to be clear and you have to be objective. There are two conditions which requires here. Clear, there is no doubt and foggy pictures. No, just be clear. And objective. Objective means regardless what are your beliefs, your prayer premises that you have adopted in the past, your background. No, be objective. As with any historical study, the basis of our task should be a question of understanding what exactly happened. This is what we want to know about the past, isn't it? Imagine that you have a mirror while you're driving that's not that clear. It wouldn't reflect what is on the reverse side of your car, on the back side of your car. So you need a clear image, a clear picture in order to know what is going on. So in historical studies, what we need is actually to know what exactly happened. So a method that while studying history, what would be a very convenient example for our case? Actually, a few days ago before I came here, I bought my little boy a game. What's a game? It's not like a computer game, a digital game. No. Don't like that much. But I bought him a very typical toy for children under 6 years old age, and I bought him puzzles. Puzzles. What does he like? There's a film about, cars and being transformed into human beings. It's called, Transformers, I think. So I bought him that puzzle. And he was working on those pieces of puzzle. And somebody came and he approached me. What are you promoting? Western culture? What has this to do with Western culture? He's playing puzzle. Transformers is just a film for children. And what is he playing? He's playing, he's learning how to put these pieces of puzzle together. So the fact is that I told him, you don't understand. Actually, I'm teaching him history. That's how he should learn to live when he is studying history. So studying history can resemble the reconstruction of scattered pieces of puzzle. How to bring all these small pieces together. The only difference, which here lays the whole crucial difference actually, is that while studying history, you don't have a manual, don't have a whole picture. You have to work it out. You have to have a good imagination to work what is the whole image, the panoptic image, and then you have to work it out. That's the only difference. Now, social and collective responsibility must also be evenly distributed to each and every single individual in a society. And therefore, as you can see from those images here, we have tried to combine both social responsibility, collective responsibility, and as how you should study and analyze historical records and information. If you agree, I want to hear your loud recitation of salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
It seems that our sisters, they're not big fan of history, so they're not going to buy their children pieces of puzzle. So, if you agree with what we're saying, I want to hear your loud salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
Now, speaking about the case about Imam Hussein, about Ashura, don't you think there's something really wrong there? It's a great tragedy what has happened during the day of Ashura, it is something big that is beyond our imagination as well. Some historians, you know, they said we cannot digest the idea that the Muslim Ummah, after being taught by the Prophet, educated by them, they became so close that they have witnessed and they had visions to see hellfire, they have been, you know, through paradise, and so many of them were martyred. How could they have ever, you know, dared to do such a thing? So it's impossible. They couldn't imagine that at all. But even though we tried here to look at it from a societal and socialist, those who are social and work with sociology, they know how to analyze things. But one thing is for sure amongst them, is that, I quote again, the same book, The Martyr of Freedom, Volume 1, quote, "Sociologists have unanimously agreed that big social changes can only occur in gradual progression. You see, you have to expect things happen in gradual progression. Any form of development within the social arena, you cannot expect it to happen within, you know, like sudden, one day, overnight, like that. Like you press the button, like a robot move. No. We are dealing with human beings. We are dealing with societies. These social changes need and require their own time. So, any form of change, social change, can only occur in gradual progression. Now, this fact applies to all kinds of social changes and must therefore relate to any form of deviation from and or guidance to the right path." Can't you imagine the Prophet ﷺ took him how many years to change his society from a complete ignorance, jahiliyyah, into al-Islam? How many years? Could that happen within one night, like this? No. He had to struggle, he had to work. So any form of social change, it needs its gradual progression. A quest of society towards perfection or deviation from the correct teaching are again the other forms of social change. One cannot expect a journey towards perfection or corruption, regardless, to take only a few days or a short period of time. It was a considerable task for the Prophet ﷺ to alter the whole society's moral values from those of pre-Islamic polytheistic community to a totally different one with modified Islamic values and a new social ethical order. Again, and taking into consideration the incident of Ashura, including the cruel murder of the Prophet Muhammad ﷺ's grandson and all the male members of his family. And before this, this is a very long sentence. Listen. "And before this, leaving them, including his few months old baby, to the sufferings of intense thirst and killing this baby only because his father threatened them for a small amount of water for him, and then taking captive the poor Prophet's family, including the woman, and treating them as though they were disbelievers." That was a long sentence. "While it was a terrible crime and will remain an unforgettable and unforgivable offense, it also reflects a state of a very social disorder." It's not a normal thing. It's a serious social disorder, which could never have emerged in such a limited period of time as that between Yazid's rise to power and the day of Ashura. Some may have, you know, traced the tragedy of Karbala and said, you know, Yazid became a caliph and he was a corrupt man, therefore he committed that crime, full stop. Oh, no, no, no. Don't come with such a simplistic argument. It is more complicated than that, believe me. There must be a more panoptic analysis of the historical events that took place after the Prophet's demise. There must be something wrong that had taken place that day. And by the way, some of our brothers said we didn't get exactly what was the logic behind that caricature of an owl and, you know, a cat being involved together, then having a second generation mixture of an owl and a cat. Yeah, the metaphor behind that is that those who are doing things, committing things, sometimes could be so devastated, causing such a devastated condition, but they won't be able to understand that. It's only the second generation would be able to grasp that. So what has taken place during the day of Prophet's demise, i.e. Saqifa, has a direct relation to the day of Ashura. Let's check why we say that, and let's see how Imam Ali's position and status was during the time of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. First, I'm not quoting him, because if I quote him, some of our non-Shia brothers will say, well, because he's Ali, of course he's praising himself. No, we are quoting those who were declared enemies of Ali, or they have chosen his enemy's side as well. Abu Sa'id al-Khudri, what does he say? وَلَقَدْ كَانَ لِعَلِيٍّ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ دَخْلَةٌ لَيْسَ لَهُ لِأَحَدٍ غَيْرَهُ عَلَى النَّبِيِّ صلى الله عليه وسلم. So, translation, no one met the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم more than Ali, so also did the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم meet him. The Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم meeting was to come up to them every day. Remember, every day. Zayd ibn Thabit said to Imam Ali, now who's Zayd ibn Thabit? Zayd ibn Thabit is the one who has, while he tenaciously used to support Uthman, he is addressing Imam Ali saying, أنت من رسول الله بالمكان الذي لا يعدله أحد. Translation, no one has the same dignity as you in front of the messenger. Now, the man knew the prophets like none of other companions did. However, his enemies could not tolerate his elevated position. Rather, they did not want to grasp it at all. This is the problem. They don't want even to know what kind of man he was. So just like some companies, you know, you're calling them, you know, you don't have good service, you don't have good customer service, and because the boss is not interested in that, say, what do you mean your people cannot work with our people? What's wrong with our people? They don't even to know. So, just like a company, they were looking for something for the future. Anyway, as something has gone wrong during the day of Saqifa, and we know what has gone wrong during the Saqifa, I'm going to quote here a Norwegian proverb, which I found really relevant to our discussion. That Norwegian proverb says, "Den lugnen drar den andre etter seg," which means that one lie ultimately leads to one that follows it. So it is actually in this way we should look as whatever has happened after the Prophet's demise. There was something wrong there. There is a lie. A big lie. But this lie requires another lie, which follows after. And the other lie follows after. And the other lie, it's not going to end. Now, quoting, by the way, I tried to bring you this image of of yin and yang, you know, falling apart, they don't walk, they don't speak, they don't communicate. Those who know about yin and yang, they're always, you know, linked together, they're always joined together. Here they're not working together. So some of the companions, you know, just fall apart, they don't want to work together. It is in this way, now I'm quoting the Martyr of Freedom again. It is in this way that we must perceive the incident that followed the Prophet's demise. And it is through this direction that we should link the event of Saqifa with the consequences that took place afterwards. The best and most effective approach is to provide an example where everything is linked together. One form of connection is similar to that observed in domino pieces. Haven't you seen the domino pieces? They are somehow, you know, organized that once the first one would fall, all other pieces will follow after. Domino pieces, when one falls, the other follows suit. This is known as inductive connection. Another form can be understood in the example of a watch chain, when all the pieces being linked together are inseparable, unless one or more pieces are removed. This is called a deductive connection. So, in this case, we will perceive the events following the Prophet's passing away under the first category, the inductive method. This is what we are doing now. The inductive method is that we want to learn from those historical records to know the logical connections between them. That is the first piece of domino. This has fallen down. The rest would follow. If you have any rejection, please raise your hand. Let's follow democracy. Don't you want to follow democracy? Anyone disagree about that logic? So if you agree, then I want you to recite loudly, salah. Now, you might be surprised that this letter is written by a caliph. He was a caliph and he was Amir al-Mu'mineen. But I want to reveal who was that man. Although you have, you know, access to know it there. But let's see what he has to offer us to learn about these pieces of domino. I quote, this is a letter written by a caliph. What does he want to tell us? To tell the history. We are watching, we are trying to have a panoptic view, remember? So, he says, your father, I quote, your father and I knew the virtue of Ibn Abi Talib and his right that we had to regard and accept. When Allah chose for his prophet what he had, carried his promise, spread his mission, and cleared his evidence, then he raised his Prophet ﷺ soul to the better world. Your father, he's addressing someone, somehow he's involved, he said, your father, and وَفَارُوقَهُ, in the original text actually, but we have translated it into Umar. Your father and Umar were the first who exhorted Ali's right and opposed his claim. What would he say? Well done? Oh, no. On that they agreed and became consistent. They were like partners. Alright? Then they asked him to pay homage to them, but he did not respond to them, so they intended to force him by any means, even the worst of it. Unquote. Finish. That's a letter. Written by whom? So-called Amir al-Mu'mineen. Who is Amir al-Mu'mineen here? Muawiyah. Addressing whom? Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr. See, your father, he was saying. So he knew how to address him in a very sly way. Your father is the one. So, the continuation of this letter goes like that. So if there was something wrong, don't blame me. Go and blame your father. That's the rest of the letter. But what I have written here, that he was referring and addressing Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr concerning the early reception of Ali's right by Abu Bakr and Umar. Now note, and be careful, to know that Muawiyah emphasized a weak point of his addressee's personal circumstance. What's that? He was saying, your father. So don't blame us. Yeah? That's what he wants to say. You may say, this is a fake letter. It could have been made up. All right, fine. What about another letter? And here we're talking about another incident. Confessed by whom? By his son. Well, the father is lying. His son is lying as well? No. It's again a private conversation between partners as well. But this time, between the son of that Khalif and the son of the second Khalif. This narration is actually narrated by Al-Balaghiri in his book Ansabul Ashraf. Now what does he say? لما قتل الحسين كتب عبد الله بن عمر. You see, عبد الله بن عمر, the son of the first, second Khalif. إلى يزيد بن معاوية. أما بعد فقد عظمة الرزية. Blah blah blah. He talks a lot until I quote here the English text. Once Al-Hussein ibn Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, was killed, Abdullah ibn Umar wrote a letter to Yazid ibn Muawiyah saying, the calamity has surely intensified, and so has the catastrophe. An event of a great import has taken place in the history of Islam. And he's right in that. No day can ever be like the day when Al-Hussein was killed. Unquote. Who's talking here? Abdullah ibn Umar, the son of the second Khalif, addressing Yazid. Yazid answered him, you know, he would follow the same logic like his father. And unfortunately, he's using an insidious and, you know, evil logic, but it would be consistent. Yazid answered him saying, you fool, ya amma ba'du ya ahmad. That's what states actually in Arabic. You fool, we only came to homes improved, beds prepared, and pillows filled out, so we fought over them. If right is on our side, then we simply defended our own right. But if rights belongs to others, then, you see, as I said, the same logic. Then, your father, again, returning back to him. I told you, he's the son of the second Khalif. Then your father was the first to start such a tradition, confiscating for himself that which belonged to others. And he's right as well. As I said, it's a double logic. It is consistent, but it is a double logic. You know, don't blame us, go and blame your father. Isn't he your father? Isn't he your father? Can you deny that? No. So this is the problem, actually, that things always would follow in a systematic way, including historical events, as like, just like everyday's matters, everyday things. As you can see from this caricature. Things would follow him like a circle. In every restaurant, therefore, they put a restaurant, you see. Go drink, go back there, and you see. Just like a systematic way. It's going to follow us after and after, and again and again. In our ordinary life, we witness things following each other in systematic order. When it comes to historical events, one may look at them similarly. Just look at things exactly as they could, you know, happen in everyday life. How would that happen? Take all of that into your consideration. Therefore, we can see that the historical records confirm that what has happened after the Prophet's demise, confirms that many companions of the great Prophet of Islam, once they died, you know, Arabs were so poor. So how come? When they died, they were so obsessed with gold, with money, with fortune, and to have a prosperous life. When they died, there were some of them were on that day of his death, had so many giant pieces of gold, which means kilos, you know. What does it mean? I am quoting historical records, literally, literally. ما بعض الأصحاب حينما مات كان لديه من الذهب ما يكسر بالفؤوس. So giant pieces of gold. Now my question is that, and I think you all share with me the same question, could such a man really live up to the required standard, ethical standard, which is required from Mujahid fi sabilillah? What? Mujahid fi sabilillah. Rarely could a person really be a Mujahid fi sabilillah. Some people came to the Prophet and said, O Rasulullah, لماذا نرانا لا نقدم على التضحية والجهاد في سبيل الله. He said, why wouldn't we dare to fight and, you know, sacrifice for the sake of Allah? He asked them, do you have money? Do you have gold at home? And they said, oh, Rasulullah, we've got a lot. He said, no, okay, just give it for the sake of Allah, and there you go. Definitely would dare for shahada, for martyrdom. Because the more you save, you expect to live one day more. That's the logic, that's psychological effect. So you expect to live more and more and more. So therefore you save more and more and more. You cannot call such a man or describe him as to be what? A mujahid fi sabilillah. Unless you follow this style, you know, of yoga, you know what he's doing. Trying to achieve total harmony, body, mind, and cash flow. That's a good yoga. Now, we know again that you get the result of what you have been doing. So the result, and whatever you're doing, you must face consequences. Muslims, let's see, Muslims who prefer to live with complete apathy. You know what does mean complete apathy? Don't care. There were some of the youth, some of their young generation, they wanted to do something. They wanted, you know, to stand against injustice, stand against oppression. You know what? They were hearing from their, what they heard from their parents. I quote again, a historical record. You know how these women were addressing their children, those youth. You know what they tell them? مَا لَكَ يَا بُنَيِّ وَشُؤُونُ السَّلَاطِينَ. What does it mean? Live in complete apathy. You shouldn't care about what's going on, you know, on politics. That's what they call it nowadays, to divide and separate between religion and politics. So don't get involved in politics. You're a religious man. If you're a religious man, don't think about politics. So your brothers are killed in Gaza. Fine, you know. Malika was showing us something. This is, you know, you're living in the United States. Don't speak about Gaza. You're fine. You're living a prosperous life. What do you want more than that? And Iraqis being killed by invaders. Okay, fine. Shut up. Don't speak. You live in democracy. Why? This is, you know, separation. We don't want you to be involved in politics. That's what they were saying. Again, Muslims who knew the truth but failed to follow it. Anas ibn Malik was one of the companions who witnessed whatever has happened during the day of Ghadir. And when Imam Ali asked him, can you witness, and not only him, he asked the whole audience who were present on that day in the mosque of Kufa. He asked them, I am asking you, those who have witnessed and they have been during the day of Ghadir, please, I want them to rise and stand up and to witness whatever has happened during the day of Ghadir. Alright? So, more than 40 of them stood up and they have witnessed whatever they have heard the Prophet ﷺ saying, Ya Ali, man kuntu mawla, fahada Aliyun mawla. Only Anas ibn Malik. He didn't stand up. So Imam Ali addressed him, what about you? Shaykh, you know, haven't you been through that? You know what was the answer? Oh, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, you know, I became old, I'm quoting him. He became old. He forgot whatever has happened on that day. And Imam Ali looked at him, he said, أصابك الله ببيضاء لا تواريها العمامة إن كنت كاذبا. If you are lying, I hope that God will give you a lepers. بيضاء لا تواريها العمامة. And after that, he was suffering from that. And he was saying, هذه لعنة رجل ولي من أولياء الله تعالى. يخاف الله تعالى. That's his curse. Which took effect directly. He was saying that. This is all confirmed by historical records, even by Sunni Muslims, not only by Shia. Everyone has narrated that. Again, Muslims who did not assiduously adhere to the Prophet's order. The Prophet telling them something and they choose other what? Something different. Why? They just don't care. That's why. If they wouldn't care to adhere to the prophetic tradition and prophetic order, of course they wouldn't care about his grandson would be martyred mercilessly during the day of Ashura. Quite simple. That's logic. Muslims, again, who did not give the right leader what was rightfully his and favored a different, unqualified leader, should have expected the natural consequence of their evil choice. Would you disagree? Oh no. They say you can have a pig, you know, to save money. So save money, you can buy a house. But once you do not use that, you know, pig to save money in it, you keep it as your friend. Well, that's a disaster. You have to expect something wrong. Just like that between an owl and a cat, isn't it? Now, you may say, well, we have been discussing about Saqifa and all this. Are you going to blame them? Is it a form of, you know, someone who's going to do this? You are going to sue them, take them to the court? Oh no. Listen, my dear, sometimes and throughout history, many of those who were involved in shaping tragedies, they didn't know what they were doing. They just didn't know. They were so simple. What is the real consequence of what they are doing? But we are talking ethically. Who is responsible? We are talking about collective responsibility. And how this deviation has taken place within the Muslim Ummah and the Muslim society. How could that happen? That started from that day. So they even did not realize what they were doing. I mean, that serious. Had intention that they were not consistently evil. Or sometimes, I'm talking about throughout the history, I'm not talking specifically about that group. No, I'm talking generally. Those who are throughout the history, who have been involved or in a way shaping tragedies, sometimes sporadically had good even intention. They had even good intentions. Like whom? Like Khawarij. You know, Khawarij, they had good intentions. Therefore Imam Ali al-Islam described them, what did he describe them? He said, لا تقاتل الخوارج من بعدي. Although he fought them and he killed most of them. There were only like 6 or 7 people who remained alive. So he killed all of them. But he gave this very important statement, which would be again useful for us nowadays. لا تقاتل الخوارج من بعدي. He was trying to make a comparison somehow between Muawiyah and his army and his party and Khawarij. لا تقاتلوا الخوارج من بعدي فإن من طلب الحق فأخطأه ليس كمن طلب الباطل فأصابه. He was a devil, that man. He became a khalif. As we have seen, that was a devil logic. Didn't we call that the devil logic? That's a devil logic. So sly was he. طلب الباطل. He achieved what he was aiming, what was his goal. So لَيْسَ كَمَنْ طَلَبَ الْحَقَّ فَأَخْطَاهُ. Here he's referring to Al-Khawarij. Khawarij, they were just, let's say, if you wouldn't mind to call them idiots. They didn't know what they were doing. So they called them رَوَاحِلَ الْجَنَّةِ رَوَاحِلَ الْجَنَّةِ. Come on, hey, where? To paradise, fighting Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam and to paradise. What a simplistic argument. Fighting Amir al-Mu'minin to end up in paradise. What paradise is that? Look at that, how simple those people were. So, you know, simple-minded they were. لا تقاتل الخوارج من بعد فإن من طلب الحق. Sometimes you may feel people, some of our youth, they don't know. They just want to do things on the right way, but they don't know. Try to help them. Therefore Imam Ali alayhi salam has tried his best. It has not been narrated in so many historical books and records that he was constantly trying to help them. Sometimes he was speaking to them. Sometimes he was sending a delegation, Ibn Abbas, other companions, speak to them. And so many of them realized that they were wrong. So they changed. They switched position. They were just simple. And they had, some of them, well, I would say, due to being simple, good intention. Rawah al-Jannah, that's what they called them. Come on, you know, fight! Rawah al-Jannah! Now, taking into consideration such a big deviation from the right path, it means only great men with big hearts, significant sacrifice, only those people are qualified to correct the miserable condition and devastating position. As they say in Farsi, that's a good and very convenient example of what we're talking about. Yek diwane, that's what they say in Farsi. Yek diwane, sang birun mindaze tu chav, chehel ta'aqalan nemitune, birun kune. Which means, if an idiot, a crazy man, just throw a stone, a big stone in a, you know. How many people you need? 40 people to take it out. And they won't manage to do that. Why? Because it's so difficult. Now only great men like Imam Hussein could have managed to correct the direction of history into the right path. Conclusion? Imam Hussein was not killed by a single individual. That was our conclusion. He wasn't killed by a single individual. Rather, it is the responsibility of the whole Muslim Ummah. First. Second. Imam Hussein's calamity during the day of Ashura can only be grasped if we take a panoptic view to detect and highlight the underlying factors that have contributed and paved the way to the merciless tragedy of Karbala. That's the second. And the third would be, in our contemporary time, we must secure that no such a similar incident shall take place in our society. We were not studying, my dear, history in order to remain in the past. No. No. We want to study the history in order to learn for our present and to take lessons for our future. Remember the last bullet point here. In our contemporary time, don't say this is not my responsibility. This is not my duty. No, we are all involved in it. In our contemporary time, we must secure that no such similar incident shall take place in our societies. Otherwise, we shall be cursed forever. أعتذر عن الإطالة, and I hope that we have learned something for today and for the present and for the future. ادعوا معي. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة, وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا, حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا. أستغفر الله لي ولكم, والحمد لله رب العالمين, وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى بيته الطيبين.